Hi, I'm Daryl Cagle, and this is the Cagle Cast. We're all about political cartoons, and today is our Earth Day podcast. We've got cartoons about the environment, and we have four great cartoonists with us today. We have R.J. Mattson, who is the cartoonist for Roll Call in Washington, D.C. for over 30 years. And for many years, R.J. was the cartoonist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He's been a cartoonist for The New Yorker, The New York Observer, Mad Magazine, and he's won lots of awards. From Florida, we have Taylor Jones, who's been drawing for decades for the Hoover Digest. And for many years, he was a cartoonist for El Nuevo Dia in Puerto Rico and for U.S. News and World Report. He has a butterfly garden in his backyard. From Oaxaca, Mexico, we have Peter Cooper, who's also a New Yorker cartoonist and who drew Spy vs. Spy in Mad Magazine for over 20 years. He's drawn dozens of books and won lots of awards and has taught at School of Visual Arts and Harvard University. And Peter draws a weekly wordless cartoon about the environment for Charlie Hebdo in France that we'll see today. From Calgary, Alberta, we have Guy Parsons, a brilliant Canadian cartoonist who we syndicate as an American cartoonist so that he won't be invisible to American editors. Guy has won a bunch of awards too, and he's drawn for the Calgary Herald and the Globe and Mail in Canada. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, Daryl.
Okay. Lots of people are listening to us in audio only, so I'm going to read and describe the cartoons. Just bear with me when I do that. And RJ, we're going to start with you. Here's your first one. You've got Congress before time, and they're all dinosaurs. And one Republican dinosaur says, "Madam Speaker, this asteroid alarmism is the biggest hoax ever." I think this is a great cartoon.
I drew that. That must have been in 2008 when my daughter was 5 years old and in her dinosaur phase. So I probably had seen The Land Before Time maybe 50 times that year.
Well, that's a wonderful cartoon. It's timeless.
But I want to take credit. I've forgotten that I'd drawn this until you asked me to look up Earth Day cartoons and related environmental cartoons. And I want to take credit for the inspiration for the Don't Look Up movie, that wonderful satire, which equates an asteroid coming to destroy the Earth with our indifference and inability to do anything about global warming.
Very good. Well, we'll give you credit for that.
Thank you.
Here's Uncle Sam, and he's wearing his Earth Day Kiss the Chef shirt and pouring too much lighter fluid on his hugely flaming Earth barbecue. Any words about this one?
No,
this is a nice looking cartoon.
St. Louis at the Post-Dispatch. A new phase of my life: family, kids, house, backyard barbecues. I hadn't done much of that in the 20 years previous when I was in New York City.
This is a nice takeoff on Saul Steinberg's New Yorker cover, the big book of global warming cartoons, 2007 to 2107. You've got the classic view of instead New York is flooded and just tops of the buildings poking out. It's a lovely cartoon.
Thank you. I'd actually seen a map that week predicting, you know, what the United States would look like in 100 or 200 years, and you know, basically Pennsylvania would be the East Coast, was the gist of the map. So that's why I highlighted Pennsylvania as the one state, the first state you see after the flooded New York City.
I see we lost California too.
Yep, you lost California. That's right.
So here's a frozen capital, particularly the Senate, and it's on an iceberg that's breaking up, and it says climate change legislation. That's a great looking cartoon.
Beautiful piece.
Thank you. That's one of those challenging ideas. Just wanted to see if I could do it, you know, pull up, make the Capitol building look like it's part of an iceberg or an ice shelf, I would say, that's cleaving.
It's right. a beautiful piece, RJ.
Okay, here's the Environmental Protection Agency with their columns exuding polluting smoke.
Right, and this was drawn right after Trump was elected president and the new administration was settling in, and they were relaxing or reversing all the environmental standards that were set, especially regarding coal.
And looking through the cartoons for this, I noticed that there was a lot more passion for environmental cartoons when Trump was in office, and a good deal when George W. Bush was in office, and a whole lot of cartoons that depict columns on buildings as smokestacks or pipes exuding waste. That's one of those tropes that cartoonists love, I guess.
Right. I had done a variation when the Supreme Court made a decision about the EPA, and it was, you know, generally similar vibe to it. It's that happens so often with cartooning, where you just have ideas get in the air and then we all end up gravitating towards something without you know, I very often don't look at the internet to see if somebody's done something if I feel like something is truly original. Like I know I haven't seen that specific image and I don't want to put the kibosh on it because I know I'll do a variation. Sometimes, yes, but do you guys look at the web for whether something's been done?
I look because I don't want to do the same thing because I'm greedy and I think that maybe people won't buy it if it's similar to everybody else's.
Here, RJ, you've got a big oil guy riding on a oil rig that made to look like an elephant. It's the new Republican elephant. This is another timeless cartoon.
But this was during the 2008 presidential campaign, McCain and Palin, and the whole drill, baby, drill mantra that the Republicans settled on as a major campaign slogan.
All right, we're switching to Guy. You've got Mother Nature, and she's looking at all these bad polluting things, the factories, the cars, the water pollution. She says, I was wondering if you could maybe dial things back a wee bit. And the factory says, what, are you crazy? That would hurt the economy. This is very nice.
A lot of people commented on that one. I've got all the things that you need. I've got spewing pipes. I've got smokestacks.
Yeah.
Everything's dark and bleak looking. Coming from a guy who's, I got solar on my roof. I'm moving into a net zero house. These things are important to me. And I keep, like in Alberta too, they drill a lot of oil here. I'm really worried about things going back to the way they were. That wasn't me, by the way.
It sounds like you've got wildlife in Alberta.
That wasn't mine. That was somebody else's dog.
That's my dog in Maine. All right.
Yeah, see, he's smiling. That's his dog. Yeah.
And here you've got the couple having dinner. The French waiter says, and Monsieur's dish is wild-caught sesame-encrusted mahi-mahi raised on only the ocean's finest plastics.
Yes, it's funny how some ideas just come to you. I was sitting at the kitchen table after, I think, a couple of martinis, and my wife and I were talking about the oceans, and the thing just popped right into my head. I love it when you get those little gifts that you don't have to work for.
Here you've got Dad with the kid in bed who's scared of monsters. Dad says, no, don't worry. If you don't believe in it, it's not real. And the climate change monster's looking in the window.
Apropos what you just said, Guy, do you keep some kind of ability to write down ideas when you get them? Like you keep a notebook or anything with you?
Oh, yeah. Got it right here. It's a big, huge folder full of paper. So I just use my phone. And then when I get home, I just record it.
Simple, yeah.
But yeah, I saw a thing about the black comedian, what's his name? Anyways, he said he had a fishbowl. Who's the guy that's big right now?
Chris Rock.
Dave Chappelle?
Not Chris Rock, but the other guy.
Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle?
And he said, yeah, he keeps a goldfish bowl in his kitchen. And every time he comes up with an idea, he just, anything. He just jots it down and throws it in there. And I thought, when he said anything, so anything that comes to me, even if it's stupid, I throw it in the file. And I get some great ideas without even having to work for it. And Tom Waits says he has a muse, and his muse will give him ideas if he's open for it. So I'm always asking my muse to help me out today, and usually I get a reply. You know,
I'm guessing that's not too good for the goldfish. All right, here's monster climate change and climate solutions. The little knight is coming to slay the climate change. That's an optimistic cartoon or a pessimistic cartoon?
I was thinking of Greta Thunberg when I came up with this idea, because she's saying basically nobody's doing anything. What did she say? Blah, blah, blah.
All right, here you've got then and now. Then you've got the gal yelling, stop climate change. And now you've got the gal with the sign that says deal with climate change.
It's so true now, right? We can't stop it anymore.
We've passed all of those deadlines for the apocalypse, and now it's just a matter of how bad the apocalypse is.
I guess I'm an optimist, you know, if you look at my cartoons.
I thought about inviting a conservative cartoonist to this, and I didn't really want to have that conversation. That would have just dominated the whole thing.
Yes.
Okay. Here you've got Exxon, Total, Big Oil, Big Coal, and Big Gas saying climate change is real. We caused it. Who knew it was coming? And in the next panel, it's who cared? They're all blaming each other.
That came out of that news story when you heard about Exxon, that they knew years and years ago. They, in fact, their own researchers warned them of what was going to happen, and they didn't care. Profits were the most important thing. And, you know, as a shareholder in so many companies, and I used to be a shareholder in a lot of oil companies, not anymore, but shame on them. You know, it's like the tobacco companies. You know, I used to smoke heavily, and I didn't think it was that bad for me until I started realizing, geez, I'm losing my vision in one of my eyes because I smoked. And so these guys, they're letting us poison our kids' future. And nobody's holding their feet to the fire. Nobody's saying, you got to pay for this. So I thought that I wanted to do something stark anyways about that.
Well, it's a pretty cartoon. It's got bright, cheery colors.
Yeah, I should have been more muted, dead colors. I should have made them all green.
When cartoonists have muted colors, we sometimes get complaints from editors that say, stop the muted colors. I'm paying for color on the editorial page.
Well, sure. And the most popular cartoons are always the brightest, right?
Well, the ones the
editors
like.
You think mine would sell better?
They look better on the page layout thing.
Taylor does very pretty cartoons. I'm switching to Taylor now. Taylor, here you've got the guy rowing his boat through all of the ocean of plastic. And he says, ban single-use plastic bags. That'll fix everything. But of course, the ocean of plastic is filled with every kind of nasty plastic junk. And the poor seagull says, if only. This is very nice.
Unlike Guy, I take a pretty pessimistic view of our environmental future. This is one of the pieces I did for Hoover Digest. Now, Hoover Digest is a small publication for the conservative Hoover Institution. And in terms of environment...
Do you find that frustrating, Taylor? I mean, does Hoover Institution take a point of view, for example, on the environment that's opposite yours and you have to kind of hold your nose?
Well, sometimes. But the thing is that here, my feeling is that I think in general, liberals are really good at assessing the problem and often much more honest about it. But sometimes I think a lot of liberal solutions fall short. And I don't know how, as greedy as the energy industry is, I don't know how we are going to solve environmental problems without some sort of cooperation that's going to involve business. Over the years, I worked things out with my editors and it works out okay.
So you've just kind of gotten used to them.
Yeah. Right. They're very good people to work with.
Okay, well, here you've got a monkey with monkeypox, and he says, monkeypox, let's talk about humanpox. It's everywhere, disfiguring everything. And the chicken who has monkeypox says, but there's a vaccine, right? And the frog that has monkeypox says, nope, no.
Cute. Was that your friend's accent?
That's my monkey accent.
Again, with the pessimism, I'm not counting on humans to dig us out of this hole.
This is a tough cartoon to get past editors. They don't like any kind of pox or human maladies in cartoons. They don't like poo-poo or pee-pee or blood. They don't do anything with blood. And the cartoonists love to draw blood. They love to draw all of these human fluids and things. And the cartoons just do not appear.
Daryl, during the Trump administration, you know, there's many presidents now. I'm old enough that there have been many, many presidents in my lifetime. And there have been, you know, some that I've liked or sort of liked and some that I've various degrees of dislike bordering on hatred. But Trump is the one president that I have utterly despised. And I'm not sure it made me a better cartoonist because so many of my Trump cartoons have been scatological, things that editors don't want to see. But that's all I see when I think of Trump. I don't know if any other cartoonists have had that same problem.
It's not so much a problem with Trump because editors won't print cartoons about Trump no matter what they are, which is a great frustration to cartoonists. I've talked to some cartoonists who thought that Trump was a great renaissance for editorial cartoonists because we all had this wonderful bunch of passionate things to draw about, but we were just drawing them for ourselves. It was a great frustration to me. And we had such a large percentage of the cartoons about Trump. We just had a large percentage of the cartoons that were not getting printed. And it was a very small amount of cartoons available to the editors. And they complained loudly about that.
I've had just the opposite experience drawing for Capitol Hill, the Roll Call, which is the newspaper of Congress in Capitol Hill. And, you know, the audience is members of Congress and everybody who works on Capitol Hill. It's sort of a small town newspaper for Capitol Hill, and it's very insider. And the editors generally shy away from picking on personalities, and they don't want to come across as favoring one political party over the other. But they ate up every Trump cartoon because all the conservatives, all the Republicans, Capitol Hill hated Trump from the beginning, and they had to play along. And there's a lot of comedy in that. Right. When people have an opinion that they can't express publicly and they have to eat their words a lot or reverse their positions like Lindsey Graham did. So it was liberating for me because I could do far more political stuff, far more hard hitting stuff than I ever would have done for that particular paper because all of their audience hated Trump and only half of their audience was willing to say it. But the other half delighted in seeing the cartoons, I would imagine.
Well, I think you had a rare, fortunate editorial cartooning experience there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Speaking of Lindsey Graham, RJ, have you found that he contradicts himself pretty much every day?
Yeah. Yes, I have.
They clearly have some photos on that guy that they can blackmail him in whatever direction they want. I've never seen even wiggle more, you know, like clearly when called upon, he has to do whatever so he doesn't go to, you know, whatever. They have something on him. That's the expression on his face is that. I found actually at the New Yorker that I had lots and lots of opportunity to do Trump cartoons for their daily and even for the magazine. There was sufficient opportunity around, and they didn't seem to shy away from that.
I'm kind of proud of our profession that the cartoonists did not shy away from drawing Trump cartoons when Trump was in office just because they weren't getting printed. We have so many great Trump cartoons. In fact, here's one of them. Taylor, this is your Trump cartoon of the birds. You want to explain this one?
Yeah, one of the many things that Trump liked to do through executive order was he tore up the Migratory Bird Act, which dates way back to 1918, as you can see there. And the birds didn't like it.
Oh, very good.
Nicely done. It's like an Audubon Society drawing. It's beautiful.
That was
yeah,
the point.
And lots of...
And it involved... And there's bird poop, too.
Birds pooping.
There was so much, you know, anytime I could work in excrement into a Trump cartoon, I would.
Oh, very good. Here's one where you have Trump farting. Trump says, "You won't be laughing anymore. The fart heard round the world. Withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accord." Taylor.
First thing I want to say is that I didn't know this at the time. I guess it was probably 2017 this was done, maybe 2018. But apparently papyrus typeface is now greatly frowned upon by anybody in graphics art. So I apologize for the use of it here.
I don't think anyone looks at this cartoon and thinks about the papyrus font.
I've got a friend who won't let that die. Again, Trump spent 4 years basically crapping on all things civil. And this is what we have as a result. And of course, you know, it occurs to me, whether it's Donald Trump or Ronald DeSantis, that there's a certain segment of voters. I don't really think they necessarily even care what the issue is. They just want their politicians to be, and I can't say the word, you know, it's it begins with an A. That's what they want their politicians to be, even their president. That's what they want them to be. That's certainly what they want Governor DeSantis to be. And as long as he's being that, in public, then they cheer him on. It doesn't matter what it is. And that's unfortunate, but that's the world we live in.
Was the word entertaining?
Yes, entertaining. Entertaining with an A.
This is a great looking Greta Thunberg, Taylor.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it's Joan of Arc here. And I know that she's in some way seen as very tiresome, et cetera. I kind of like her just telling off all the great leaders of the world, even if it sounds kind of silly. You know, when she's scolding them in to their faces, as she has done, I rather like that. You know,
you like for your environmental activists to start with an A word.
Yes, that's right. That's right. On the left. That's right.
No, but I know what you're saying. It's this disrespect for leaders, right? That they think they're so important, and she's just knocking them down to they're just regular people that aren't playing by the right rules.
Well, they're not actually accomplishing anything, you know.
I've been sort of surprised at how often seemingly more even liberal like comedians use her as a punching bag. She's putting down leaders, but then people hate her for being a leader. Keep on finding, I love listening to comedy specials, and I find the comedians love to attack her. And it's very curious because it's like there's so few people out there who have managed to have as much of an impact as she's had. And I guess it's just like if anybody rises up, you're going to knock them down. But
well, you know, to put in a partisan light, Democrats satirize, Republicans demonize, and they've demonized Greta Thunberg for sure. You know,
I like Greta Thunberg, and I think she's young and charming, and that makes it seem like the people who are demonizing her are nastier.
Tiny. She's physically tiny, and she stayed that way. So I think that that just makes the bullying all the more noticeable.
I like her. I love these bird cartoons, Taylor. I think if you did birds just talking to each other about the news, like so many cartoonists do, the couple sitting in front of the TV, the birds are just the most charming thing.
Well,
I
have done more of them, and I'm going to continue to do more of them, especially because having to surrender 4 months a year, about every 6 weeks, 8 weeks for Hoover Digest, and often I'm not there when I'm under deadline for that one. There's some big event that I can't really cover for you directly. The nature cartoons and things I can do whenever I want, and I should do more of them. But this one particularly was actually inspired by just outside my neighborhood. Because,
well, let me read and describe this one for our audio-only listeners. So you got three birds, and the bluebird says, "What, you're going to reopen the economy now?" And the next bird, I don't know what kind of bird this is, says, "With a return to all that noise and traffic." And the bird at the bottom says, "But we're just getting used to hearing our own voices again." This is a after COVID cartoon.
Correct. It was right. It was during the lockdowns. And that's an indigo bunting on there at the top left. And then you've got these are all American birds, all a mockingbird or northern mockingbird, if you want to get specific, there in the middle. And then a Carolina wren. Carolina wrens are very little birds, very, very loud. And but that's the thing. They are actually having to sing louder as humans and our activity gets louder and louder as well.
And really? Is that making the birds sing louder?
Indeed. They are shouting. And of course, Carolina wren's always shouting because they're so little, they have to. But what a lot of people had noticed, and this was certainly true in my own neighborhood, during the initial lockdowns, how quiet things got and how so much wildlife sort of was saying, you know, what is this? This is amazing. We should have some fun.
I think that's great. All right, here you got two more birds talking. And this bird on the left says, "We're at an inflection point, an inflection point, an inflection point, an inflection point." And the hummingbird says, "Cool your jets, wren. It's just another day."
Well, again, we have a Carolina wren here and then a ruby-throated hummingbird, only hummingbird in the eastern U.S. I guess this isn't necessarily about the environment, but it could be because I'm pessimistic about what's going to happen in our environmental future. At the same time, I get so annoyed with the language that all of us hear all the time from politicians, from pundits, et cetera, using all kinds of cliche words. And one of them is an inflection point. You know, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are always at inflection points. It's just another day. It's not an inflection point.
Peter, we're moving on to you.
Okay.
So here you've got the golfer and the golfer swinging his ball on the grass, but you pull back and you see there's just a little spot of grass and a vast parched desert. This is one of your Charlie Hebdo cartoons. You draw one of these four-panel cartoons in Charlie Hebdo every week with their environmental column.
Yes.
And tell us about working for Charlie Hebdo and drawing this very specific kind of cartoon that's so much different than the other cartoons in Charlie Hebdo.
It's good to do them as wordless comics because I don't speak French. What they asked me to do more in the last year or so is to find a headline and then attach the cartoon to that headline. And so that makes it easier, but I still really love the idea of a standalone wordless comic, doesn't have labels, and that can potentially be understood by anybody around the world. And I've been doing wordless comics for quite a long time. I did a whole graphic novel called The System that was wordless, and it's just an area that I've been exploring for decades. I think it goes back to Spy versus Spy, things that I saw like that I loved growing up, and the idea that you could communicate through a series of images like that was really appealing to me. And then having topic like the environment is a really powerful thing to work with, and I just seem to have an endless, sadly endless stream of ideas because there's an endless stream of problems to talk about.
Does that come from 20 years of Spy versus Spy getting you into that mindset?
I actually had that before. I did a comic that I self-syndicated called Eye of the Beholder that started out in the New York Times city section, and I did it there for 6 months, and it was similarly a wordless, it was a five-panel cartoon, and I did that for years, and I ended up then sending it out to alternative papers back when there were alternative papers, and you could be, you know, I'd have 10 papers running it every week. And so I was exploring that before I got the Spy versus Spy. They asked me to try out for that. It was
okay.
Here's the best cartoons, the wordless ones.
Worked in.
Here's your next one. You've got close up on the penguins on the ice, and then a penguin within a cone of ice falls into the water and becomes a martini glass, which is drunk by a bad oil guy who's dripping oil and oil logos.
That was based on the president of or the CEO of Total Oil, which is the French company. But he worked just fine as your generic, fairly evil oil company executive. This is another thing I love doing with wordless comics is to do a visual something where the image transforms. In this case, the iceberg starts to take a shape that then in the next panel looks like a martini glass and then is fully realized when you see the guy drinking the martini. So there's a lot of things like that that I can play with. And I really like exploring visual symbols that I think is really in our DNA. I think it goes back to, like, you know, our cave paintings, and that we love these symbols.
This one, you've got the car driving in front of the Capitol. You've got an airplane in the sky. You got a big limo driving away from Glasgow Airport, and they're all going to the climate conference. So, excellent hypocrisy cartoon. Tell us about this one.
Yeah, well, that's just that thing. And you know, of course, we all are kind of living with the hypocrisy, because I find myself, I'm looking up climate change things on my computer and my phone, and which is plugged in, which is using electricity. We live with a lot of contradictions that we have to, you know, try to make work in our brains. But the fact that, you know, when you had John Kerry was flying to Glasgow, and of course, going through all the using up a tremendous amount of energy in order to get to a climate change thing. And I'm happy to not just be, you know, strictly attacking the Republicans, having the opportunity to actually point out the discrepancies across the board politically. Not that I don't lean towards, you know, as I think Stephen Colbert said, that reality has a liberal bias.
The style of your cartoons in Charlie Hebdo is really dramatically different than all of the other cartoons in Charlie Hebdo. It's surprising to see it there. Can you speak to that?
I can't really, because it was such a fluke that I got that job. I had a four-panel cartoon, wordless cartoon, and I had gotten hold of the art director's email, and I sent it to him and said, I don't know if you take unsolicited, you know, solicitations, like a random cartoon. And he went, would you like to do this every week? And I was like, okay. And it just, you know, this really hit my sweet spot, because this is really exactly what I want to be doing with my time in, you know, in this crisis. I want to be drawing about this, and I'll do cartoons of this sort anyway, and pitch them around. But having a regular spot that sits next to their environmental column was just, it was fantastically good luck. And I don't fully understand, you know, there, it is outside their usual, much more, you know, Bigfoot cartoon. And certainly they do a lot of cartoon styles and show things that I don't tend to do in my cartoons. I know that I can do something more risque with them, but for the most part, I just do what I do, which is, you know, there are fewer penises in my cartoons.
I don't know if you ever do anything risque, because I haven't noticed you uploading anything our syndication.
If I do something risque for them, there's pretty good odds that it's not going to fly with any of your editors. You know, somebody's sitting on a toilet, and, you know, things are being spewed or whatever, it might work. But as, you know, Taylor demonstrated with farting, there was an article about how pollution is causing penis size to shrink. And one year it said that, and then the next year it said that pollution is causing penis size to grow, which did make it into, like, the Daily Show news and things like that. So I did some cartoon like that that was visually using smokestacks and things like that. And I just figured, you'll probably not want to run that one. So,
you want to give me your editor's name?
I really do like that they're open to a range, even if the range is only you.
It's a range of one.
A range of one.
But I am home on the range, I can tell you.
Okay, very good. So here you've got giant ice scape, and it's breaking up into Rodan's the Thinker, and then the Rodan's the Thinker breaks up and falls into the ocean as well. So
it very much relates to RJ's cartoon of the Capitol Dome, which is in the process of melting. And, you know, that whole idea, we're sitting there, we're pondering this giant problem, which is we're so close to the edge on things like having the oceans rise. And living in Manhattan, I'm painfully aware, having been around for Hurricane Sandy, that when the waters rise, it can go up to, say, 23rd Street, where cars are floating. And I'm thankfully on the Upper West Side, so I'm a little higher up, but it made me very conscious of the fact that this is around the corner, and that our ability to evolve, we're doing a lot of thinking about it, but we're not doing a lot of actioning about it. I mean, there's some, but...
Well, actually, your cartoon implies that we're not thinking about it for very long.
It was more like the threat of it is coming quickly, and time, you know, this is a time factor. Like, that we have a limited time to deal with this. And we keep hearing about this. And I think probably most people, when they hear about by 2100, something or other is going to happen, go, eh, you know, it's like a lot of things. We can only take in so much information. And so I think it's really very outside of human ability to think that into the future. We're very bad about that. And I think it's our job as cartoonists to sort of visualize these things and try to make it seem a little more real.
I love that cartoon because it suggests geologic time, that, you know, the iceberg existed for millennia before humans existed. and the humans' time on Earth is very short. And then they just disappear.
So, Peter, here you've got President Trump, whose face is a thumbprint, and he's in the position of Edvard Munch's The Scream. And I've got to say, I didn't really understand this cartoon. Can you explain it to us?
Well, I would have thought you were about to say, gee, about 20 people did this cartoon. Like I said, it turned out it was the cover of Time magazine did this. I saw about 10 versions of this variation.
No, I did it. I think I was the first one.
When did you do it?
The night he was like 2 hours after he was indicted.
Well done. I think we'll see. That was about when I did it. So yeah. I pitched it the next day to, you know, like I pitched it out there, and it was one of those. I did not look on the internet because I thought very thoroughly, like, okay, there's a pretty good chance that, you know, I'm not going to be alone on the thumbprint Trump face. Right. So it was Trump was, you know, being indicted, was getting thumbprinted, and that his no matter what he said, you could just see from the expression on his face sitting in that courtroom, and especially when the police didn't hold the door for him when he was walking in, you sense that some of the facade crumbling. And, you know, I think this is a cartoon that we'll probably be able to run several times. Just change the New York background to Georgia or Florida or wherever else the indictments are coming down. Because I'd say he's finally, some aspect of this is caught up, and we'll see how it shakes out. He's a very, very slippery eel. But I sensed there was a moment there where the chickens were coming home to roost for him.
Is that your own thumbprint?
No.
This is one of mine, moving along. one of my Trump environment cartoons. This was another Republican White House environment cartoon.
Nice one.
Smokestacks and waste pipes. I do a lot of California flags and a lot of California pollution and climate change cartoons in the California flag format. Here's Trump talking to the burning state of California. He says, it's your own fault that you're burning. You're so stupid, snot, smart, sad. When we were having giant fires, I had the couple talking to each other, but they're obscured by smoke and can't see anything. And one says, climate change caused the fires that made this smoke. And the other one says, I just don't see it. And that's enough about me. Gentlemen, I'm going to go through a bunch of cartoons by some of our other cartoonists. So this one is by John Darko, who draws a car barreling down the street, the denier's car, the street to climate change, point of no return. And one says, we don't know where we're going. The other one says, but we're making good time. You can pretty much make a car make any point you want to as an editorial cartoonist.
This is a nice one because he's got all these labels in it, but they're all integrated. This is one of the things that I try to fight off is the, you know, if you have a caricature of, say, Trump, you don't have to put Trump on his shirt, ideally. And though it's absolutely, you know, it's a tradition of the form, but I love seeing it when there's trickier solutions to that like this.
It's kind of a sissy thing to use too many labels, and it's a good manly cartoonist who doesn't use lots of labels.
I'd like to add that the technical thing, I always love John Darko's use of a pencil. His quick sketches are always great.
He is unusual for not using the computer at all.
Well, I don't either. It's other than scanning things in.
I draw on paper and scan it and paint the color on the computer.
So, gentlemen, here's Patrick Chapot from Switzerland, and he's got the 8 billionth baby being delivered by the stork into a world of war and refugees and horror. It's a nice looking cartoon.
Pretty upbeat, eh?
Yeah, very laugh fest.
Here's Adam Ziglis with American West flooded out, people sitting on the roofs of their houses, and one says, the good news is the threat of wildfire is relatively low today.
Sad truth.
It's sad. Here's Chris Wyant. He's got the guy on a desert island being rescued, and he says, mass shootings, COVID attack on democracy, the recession, climate crisis. Why would I want to be rescued?
Mm-hmm. Was that your French accent?
Basically, they're all my French accent.
Sound like a Jersey accent to me.
Okay, well, who knows where this island is?
Oh, you're a Kvetcher.
I am. Well, there's so here's Dave Wamond and poor Turtle at the ocean's edge. And the Turtle says, to tell the truth, I'm having some post-pandemic stress, too.
Good cartoon.
That is a nice
I went
cartoon.
To school with Dave. We were roommates, actually.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Small world.
I've got stories to tell you guys about Dave Wamond. Make your hair stand up.
Dave Wamond is really very popular, and you and he, we present as American cartoonists. You make an excellent American cartoonist, Guy.
Oh, thanks. I'd love American politics. You know, I'm so sad to see Trump leave office, but he really hasn't. You know, he's stuck around pretty well. I think this indictment should. But the indictment sure quietened him down, because you haven't heard a thing in the last week about anything Trump. I remember, like, in the middle of the pandemic, everything was Trump. Everything. Like, if it wasn't the pandemic story, it was a Trump story. Everything. Right?
I don't know what you're listening to, but I hear the name Trump pop up now and again on a daily basis throughout the day.
Yeah,
I do too.
Well, there's that Trump, think it's all part of the plan. Canada, isn't there?
Our great political system will provide someone new in due time. I remember in 2000, after about a decade drawing for the New York Observer, I woke up one day and I realized I didn't have Bill Clinton. I didn't have Rudy Giuliani. I didn't have Alphonse D'Amato, all of my great targets of satire gone. And then about a year later, 9/11, and it was just like, you know, who am I going to make fun of? And, you know, just stick around. Something new comes up.
Yeah. Well, also, this predates Jared Kushner owning the paper. There was a moment there I was doing work for The Observer, and I did something that was, I guess I did something about Trump or whatever, and it was just... we had a falling out, and I said, I'm not going to work for you anymore. And at the end of the week, they endorsed Trump, and they also wrote me a seriously nasty, they wrote some seriously nasty emails my way, the editor and the art director, unpleasing. But I didn't know who Jared Kushner was almost at all. I was like, this guy's bought the paper. Who's that? Right. And boy, then sure do know who he is now. I want to know more about who he is, in fact.
Don't you find it funny nowadays that political cartooning has become more safe than it was, say, 20 years ago?
I hate to put it this way, but I felt this for a while now, that in some ways, the quote editorial cartoons that people are seeing are things like Stephen Colbert's monologue. Because if you put something in his monologue along with a graphic, which he does, that's as much an editorial cartoon as anything we do. Other than it's not on paper or you know, however the various cartoonists do it. And and of course, newspapers, because of shrinking audience, aging readership, that people aren't going to their editorial pages to look for satire as they once did. And I find myself, I have many times, and I have tried to race to finish a cartoon to be done before 11:30, because there has been a couple of times, and I'm sure this has happened with all of us, where you're working on an idea, and then one of the late night talk show hosts does that in real time as a monologue joke, and I've had to crumple up the cartoon and throw it in the waste basket. So that's, in some ways, I think that's more of the competition for us.
The happier moment was when I did a cartoon that was the five stages of election denial or something like that with Trump. And it was, you know, like anger, denial, you know, is leading up to him not going along with it. And then every one of the talk shows did a variation of the five stages of denial. And it was like, and happily I got it in early enough where that didn't happen. But that what surprised me was that they all did the cartoon, not that they were taking it from what I did by any means, but it's just one of those, again, the ideas out there in the atmosphere, and then you have, they're all doing it, but you'd think they'd be looking at each other and going, you know, Jimmy Kimmel's not going to do it because Colbert did it, and The Daily Show won't do it because of, you know, Jimmy Fallon, although it's not likely that Jimmy Fallon. And, you know, so, but they too do that same thing where there's like a chewed over idea and similar joke. But, you know, it must be the, you know, producing that material like we do, it's a real, you know, you're pushing a ball up a hill every single day, and then the news gets torn up and they got to come up with something new. It's really quite remarkable sometimes. I do enjoy watching all those, the opening clips of that series of talk shows.
Well, I got to say, I think cartoonists are doing the best work that they've ever done now. We stand on the shoulders of our predecessors, and I don't think we've been deterred by editors not wanting what we want to draw. We draw what we want. I send you guys a list of the 20 most reprinted cartoons every week, and I think it's, for many cartoonists, that's a depressing list, and a real disappointment at all of the strong points of view that are not being seen. But that hasn't deterred anybody from having strong points of view, and we do great stuff.
Well, I certainly wasn't suggesting that, but I was just saying is that you know, where our audience is, and I think having what we're drawing and what our audience is can be hard to match at times, I would think.
Well, here is a wonderful cartoon by Steve Sack, our dear retired Steve Sack, who draws a Tyrannosaurus Rex with tiny little hands. He's labeled fossil fuels, and he's trying to open the door to the future, but his hands are just too small to open the door. I think that's wonderful.
Mm. Well, everything he does is pretty wonderful.
Yeah, that beautifully rendered, too.
And here is our communist Chinese cartoonist, Luo Ji, who draws very much in the point of view of the Chinese government. And they don't get printed very much, but he draws cartoons on the environment that do get reprinted, like this one, which is a cute cartoon.
It's a pile of garbage with the garbage holding a flag, and the flag is a plastic bag.
The garbage holding up a flag in the form of the Iwo Jima Memorial. So the garbage is, I guess, claiming victory over this vast garbage landscape in the same way as on Iwo Jima. And I think that's cute.
Mm-hmm. What is, I mean, a great flip-flop. No, it's really, really well, it's well done. And
we just did a podcast about China where we kind of dissed on Luo Ji for his cartoons opposing the Hong Kong protests and opposing Taiwan and defending lots of things that we never see in the press here. But I should say that the China cartoons on the environment, if not their actions, their cartoons are stuff I like to see.
Well, I would think that in China, you may have to toe the government line, but it's hard to avoid the environmental degradation. It's hard to avoid environmental degradation in China. It's all around you. And I'm sure everyone of every political stripe, in some ways, you can converge on opinions about the environment, I would think.
Anyway, I thought that cartoon was nice. Mm-hmm. Here's one from Gadis Sluka from Latvia, and he's got the fish, and they're all trapped in plastic containers.
Lovely.
It says social distancing. This is a great cartoon. Good. And this one is by Michael Kounturas from Greece. He's got the scene from Planet of the Apes with the Statue of Liberty in a devastated landscape of plastic bottles. This was this is the real apocalypse. I thought that was cute, too. Mm-hmm.
You're going to use the word cute a lot, aren't you?
I guess when you talk about the apocalypse, it's nice to find something cute. Well, gentlemen, I think that's the last cartoon.
We're standing on the shoulder of our predecessors, and it just happens that it's in quicksand. But we're
there's your cartoon for Charlie Hebdo.
Okay, well, hey, thank you for joining me, everybody. It has been a pleasure having you all. Please remember to subscribe to the Kegelcast. Subscribe to the Kegelcast. Our Kegelcast is available in both video and audio versions. So if you don't see the cartoons in your audio version, go to kegel.com or Apple Podcasts or YouTube or Spotify to watch the video. Thank you for joining us today, and we will see you next week.
Was that your French accent?
It's always my French accent.
Daryl, do you ever pull back to showing, you know, to show the cartoonists since we've already left, let you go to the screens and we're gone?
No, you're all hanging out. Gentlemen, that's the end.
And
I'll see you later. And of course, you should subscribe to this podcast. See you later.
Thanks, Daryl.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Good seeing y'all.